welcome to the fifth episode, I believe, of Get to Work Hurley, the podcast for everyone who has ever been frustrated by the professional writing life. That's me, among many others, I know. Today, I'm actually chatting with special guest, Melissa F. Olson. Now, many of you probably haven't heard of Melissa, as she will be the first to say, but as she told me, in fact, when we first met, she may not be somebody you've heard of, but she is the shit on Amazon. Melissa is actually a successful full-time writer of the popular urban fantasy novels from 47 North, the Old World series, which I believe is broken up into the Boundary Magic, Disrupted Magic, and Scarlet Bernard trilogies. Boy, I hope that's right, or she's going to kick my ass, as well as the Nightshade series of novellas from Tor Books. As you'll discover in today's podcast, Melissa is also, in fact, witty, hilarious, and great at making friends with other authors. In fact, she approached me with a topic for today's podcast, which is, I know, it's all touchy-feely, nurturing, surviving, and encouraging writer friendships. So we're going to talk about stuff like, how do you get along with writers whose books, like, you don't read or enjoy at all? Like, you've tried to read them, and you're like, oh man, I can't do it. Where do you meet writers? What happens when, like Melissa, your primary way of connecting with people you like is to tease them mercilessly? We will tackle it all. It's funny because a lot of people outside of the writing profession expect us to sort of all hate each other or be in like fisticuffs or, I mean, aren't we all in competition? Now, while there are certainly great author feuds and disagreements that get a lot of press and spawn a whole lot of Twitter threads and think pieces and all that bullshit, so what we actually talk about less is some of the great author friendships in the field that really have sustained us through dark times. Times like right now. So Melissa and I shatter the myth of competitive authors, share the story of how we met, talk about why writer friendships are so valuable in this lonely profession. And we also look at how women writers in particular can indeed have it all. Just perhaps not all at once. We also offer some tips to both budding baby writers and established pros on how to cultivate author friendships. Thanks to all my Patreon supporters for making this month's podcast possible. And with that, enjoy.
Domino's Pizza.
You wanted to talk about author friendships.
I did. Yes. It's a subject that interests me.
Go ahead and jump in and have a discussion about author friendships. So now the interesting thing for me is sometimes I'll run into people online, and I had one guy actually say, why would you make friends with these people? They're your competition.
Saw that on Twitter, and I thought that was hilarious because it could just not be more true. The only way that would be true is if there were people who read one book a year. Do you know anyone who reads one book a year? Because I sure don't. Mm-hmm. Like, you either read for fun or you don't. And if you read for fun, you know, maybe it's one book a month, but more likely it one a week. I don't think we're competing with each other. I think we're competing with video games, television, cell phones, anything that can take people away from their book.
And I agree. Yeah, no, I'm in the same spot where I think it's fascinating. It's like the whole idea that the tide, you know, the tide rises and all the ships, you know, arise at the same time. The more people
read. A rising tide. Wait.
I know. I tried to think of it too. Raises all boats. Something like that. We're professionals.
We'll just say it's right. Who's going to stop us?
Exactly. Who's going to know? But yeah, it totally is that way. People who read more. Read more. And again, you can't put out stuff fast enough for a lot of these folks. And that's why so many, yeah, like so many folks who I know, again, who do self-publishing, right? It's like you get it 6, 8, 10, 12. I know someone who writes a book a month because people devour them. So it's not like, what you're competing with is somebody playing 24 hours of World of Warcraft online. Yes. That's what you're really competing with.
I completely agree. And speaking of the speed of writing, I love hearing from people who've read my books. I love when they like tweet at me or email me, but I gotta say, like, my least favorite thing to hear is you gotta write faster.
Oh god.
And I get that a lot. I get that at least 2 a month. Jeez. People contact me to say, yeah, you gotta go faster, man. And it's like, oh really? That never occurred to me to write faster. Here I've been spending hours every day just watching television and interacting with the outdoors when I could have been writing faster. I don't know any writers who phone it in with writing. And that doesn't have anything to do with whether or not they have a day job. Like, if you're writing, you are making as much time as you can to write, or you're not doing it.
How many books do you do a year now?
I'm at about 2.5.
Okay, yeah. That's so, like, very respectable.
Or two in a novella. I would love to go faster. And once my publisher wanted me to write a book in 3 months.
Oh, God.
And I did it, and it was brutal.
Yeah.
Luckily, it was a book in a series, so, like, all the characters and stuff were already established. But I was just, I was so determined that it was not going to be any less quality than any other book I write. I was working all day, and then I'd have dinner with the family, put the kids to bed, and, like, go back to work. Yeah, I'll just write faster.
Thank you for your email. You know, I put out, I think, I did 3 books that I put out in a year once, or I turned them in a year once, and it literally broke me. I mean, literally, like, I had, like, basically a nervous breakdown. I had to go to my doctor and be like, okay, so my anxiety levels are just, I can't function now, so we had to take care of it. But it was just like, it was too much. I couldn't do it. And again, I have a day job, and I have a life, right? People have lives.
Right,
they
right.
have to have.
Also, I'm sure you've been in this position most authors have, where you're on a deadline, and you need to be productive, and you just can't.
Yeah.
Because being creative is not like churning butter, where you do the thing and you get the result and that's that. You don't always have access to the thing that makes the words.
Well, or you make the words and they're not the right ones. You got to do it again.
No, they're not the right ones. and like, this is bringing it back. Mm-hmm. This is where I find it really helps to have author friends.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if I'm talking to my friends on Facebook and I say, oh my gosh, I just can't today. I sat down and I couldn't think of anything. And I was playing around on Facebook all day. Hi, remember me? I've been here. And they're like, oh man, I know. We're like, I think if my parents saw me post something like that, they'd be like, they'd probably call me and be like, listen, Melissa, you really need to get to work.
Just get to work.
Yeah, like, because writers get it. Mm-hmm. And I think that working writers are kind of a special breed of person, and there are very few people who really understand us but each other, and maybe the people we're married to, and even they are very long-suffering, generally. You know, I think that if I say I sat down and I couldn't make myself do anything, there's a certain attitude of, well, then you are not, you don't have a good work ethic, or you're not trying, or whatever, but there are writers who will be like, oh man, I've so been there. Do you want some chocolate?
Well, and that's been my experience as well. It's such a lonely profession, right? It's like you are literally sitting in front of a computer screen, you know, hallucinating about fake people for hours on end. It's kind of crazy. Yes. It's a nutty thing to do. And yeah, you surface and you're just like, shit, what the hell am I doing? So talking to other people, I mean, like, yeah, I churned this out and it broke me, or I churned this, or I couldn't churn this out, and now I feel like a loser. That actually happened to me again with Broken Heavens. My novel came back from my agent, she's just like, you got to start over. I'm sorry. We're going to have to push it out. And I was just like, I'm a loser. But I literally went onto a listserv of a bunch of other writers I know. And they're like, oh my God, they all had a story of like that exact same thing of like, oh yeah, I've been like, yeah, here it is. It's great. And they come back and they're like, I'm sorry, you have to start over. It's shit. And you're like, I'm a loser. But yeah, they all had that story. And that was great.
Yeah.
It makes you realize that's the profession.
Well, and I think that adult friendships in general are really interesting because, like, a lot of people have the friends that they made in, like, high school or college, and that's great. Like, that's a certain kind of friend who's known you for a long time, you know? But I found that in my day-to-day life and in terms of, like, what I'm up to and where I'm going and stuff, writers are the ones who really get it. It's hard to make friends as an adult.
Yeah.
And if you're a writer, then you instantly kind of have this, like, access code to somebody's brain. Because you get how certain things work for them. If I go to convention and I meet a new writer who I don't know and I've maybe even just never heard of, and I introduce myself and, you know, we've got something in common, something really big. But at the same time, it's such a weird friendship because I don't live near almost any of my writer friends. You live very far away from me. So on the one hand, like, whenever I see you, we have such an awesome time and I feel like we're very close. Yes. And then I don't see you for a year.
Yes.
And I was thinking today about what I don't know about you, my friend Cameron, because I consider you my friend and I'm always watching you on social media and, you know, we'll like comment on each other's stuff or respond to tweets and stuff. And when we do get to see each other in person, we hang out. But I have no idea when your birthday is, whether you prefer to be called Cameron or like Cam or Hurley or other, you know, D, other. There are so many things that I don't know if you're an early bird or a night person, or I know how many dogs you have and I've met your husband. There are so many like basic friend things that we don't do.
Yeah.
you know, because we have these online friendships. Not exclusively online.
Yeah, it's not exclusively online. Thing. Yeah.
And of course, I've got conventions on the brain because I'm heading to one this afternoon, and it's summer, and that's like when all the convention stuff happens. I think a huge part of, I used to justify going to conventions with like, oh yeah, it's networking, and it's introducing myself to new readership, and stuff like that. And while those things aren't strictly untrue, I think a huge part of it is almost the like support group factor of going to the bar at night.
Yep. Oh, I know.
Like, it's just, it's such a profession of extremes. Either I am at home in yoga pants and no makeup and maybe I showered today and I'm typing on a little screen and that's my whole life, or I'm at a convention and I'm like maximum Melissa,
Woo!
You know? Woo! Like the makeup and the and pants that have a zipper.
Maybe multiple and, you know, buttons.
I'm
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
And I'm like my best self.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like no halfway for me. Either I'm like 100% Melissa or I'm like 5% Melissa, 95% writing.
You know what it is, the whole author thing, and people have asked me that before. There's something, people talk about the camaraderie of war. It's like going through a profound experience and you've all been through it. So you understand, like once somebody has written a novel, especially for me, it's like once somebody, their first novel comes out, because you experience the highs and lows of that and that entire experience. And once someone has been through that, I feel like bonded to them, like, oh, you get it. It's shit sometimes. And sometimes it's amazing. And again, like you were talking, sometimes, you know, it feels like, yeah, you're a YouTube star who 100 people know who you are. And it's so awkward to go out. And again, most of the time I'm in pajama pants. Then I go to this place and it's like, people are like, oh, I love you and you're the best. And I get these emails. Yeah. So,
and I would say that it's an ego boost, but most of the writers I know are so neurotic that like, it's not like boosting our ego. It's reviving it from the dead, you know, like, because it feels like we just send shit out into a void sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so when you have someone actually email and say, man, your books really helped me out. I was going through this hospital stay and I read 5 of them in a week and it was amazing and thank you. That to me just like lifts me back up from whatever word funk I'm stuck in. I appreciate that, but I also appreciate having writer friends. Now, let me ask you this because I'm super curious and I don't want to tell you mine until you tell me yours. Ready?
Ready.
What are you wearing? No, just kidding. That's not it. Do you read your friends' books?
Not all of them, no. No, not at all. In fact, I had that, John Scalzi and Toby Buckell live very close to me, so like every other month. Cool. Yeah, we've been doing these lunches. And at one point, there was, this awkward thing where Scalzi's like, well, and you know, have you guys read Old Man's War? And it was like, Toby's like, yeah, and I'm like, no. Like a classic of science fiction. Yeah, I'm like, I haven't read any of Scalzi's books.
Probably went home and cried on his money.
Sean, he dove into his money pit and cried. Yeah, I'm sure.
He actually keeps like some bills in like a Kleenex box, an empty Kleenex box, which by the way, he bought and then threw the Kleenex in the garbage and filled it with money. And then he weeps on it.
Because he could always buy more Kleenex.
Right, right.
I don't. I really don't. I mean, sometimes I'll try sometimes, and lots of times I'll actually try to confirm, and this is my dirty secret confession. I will confirm that someone is a good writer. I read the first few pages of some of your stuff, and I'm like, oh, good, she's a good writer. That's all right.
Although,
so I will do that.
If you read the first few pages and stopped, I know, right?
Yeah. Then you're worried.
Because I write urban fantasy, and I am one of the few, like, people I know who really mostly reads my genre.
Oh.
In my fun time, I'm always reading a book, at least one. It's usually either urban fantasy or it's a mystery. I like mysteries a lot. But you know what I don't like? Space.
Oh, you don't like space.
I just don't. I totally recognize the validity of it. I've read some. And I know that it's just not my jam.
Yep.
I don't like epic fantasy.
Man.
I don't. Yeah. And it's because of the learning. For real, like you get an epic fantasy, there's a huge gap.
There's a learning curve, yeah.
And then like everything has a freaking name, and all the names are like all consonants, so you have to memorize like the names of like the roads and the horses and the weapons.
You guys usually have glossaries. Tired, but see, I'm the same way. It's like I'm the same way with urban fantasy, where I'm just like, this is the real world. I don't want to live in the real, even if it's a little off kilter, right? I'm like, I don't want to go to the real world. I'm going to go somewhere different in space. We all have our specific things. So,
right. Yeah. And that does not offend me in the least bit as an urban fantasy author, because it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
And if I couldn't say, oh, I know, but my books are not for everyone. What a terrible, miserable writer I would be.
Could you imagine?
Like, can you imagine if you just honestly believed in your heart that every single person in the world would like your book?
It's like the whole thing where you want to believe every single person in the world will like you. Everyone's different. That's the amazing thing about people.
And I tell my kids that, and so I think I probably should understand it for my books. So no, it never offends me, but for my friends' books, sometimes I read them and sometimes I don't, especially, like, if they write urban fantasy, I'll often try them, or like the closer we become, the more I'll feel obligated to try them. But sometimes I don't tell them that I read
the book. No, don't.
Because I didn't like it.
Yes.
Or I didn't think
that
it
happens
was
to me
good.
All the time. Yeah. I get asked for blurbs all the time, and there's some time where it's a really great human being. I love them to death, and I'm just like, I can't put my name on this. I can't.
Isn't that so awkward?
I hate it. Yeah.
Oh, gosh, that's happened to me.
Yeah.
There's been books where it's not really my jam. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure why they even want my blurb, just, I assume, desperation. So I'll read some of it, like, enough to verify that it's okay.
Right.
And then I'll say something like, the first chapter grabs you right out of the gate. Which is, if it's honest, I'll say it. Like, their writing style just really sings to me. Like, I might say something like that.
You're nicer than I am. I have to love something, man. I have to love it.
I won't endorse books that I don't feel confident about.
Yeah.
In fact, like, a few months ago, I was asked to be part of a writer's, like, sort of group that was sort of like a round robin where you would read each other's books and then recommend them. And I declined, even though there were some really nice writers, because if I didn't like a book, I'm not going to talk about it. Yeah. And then I would actually be forced into a confrontation with the author where I'd have to be like, sorry, dude, thought it blew. Which, you know, like, I spend my whole life avoiding that kind of confrontation. Like, I'm not going to sign up for it.
Totally. Yeah.
So, like, if you are my author friend and I have said that I read your book, then I liked it. If you're my author friend and I said I haven't read your book, the odds are pretty good that I haven't read your book. But it's also possible that I did read it and I quietly didn't like it.
Yep.
And I see no reason why we can't still be friends.
Yeah. Agreed. That's a really good one, which, yeah, like, I don't read at most people's books. But now the other big one is professional jealousy.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I had down, because, you know, everyone talks about this quite a bit, is how do you handle professional jealousy and remain friends or colleagues or whatever with people when they're getting these big deals, they sell way more, or they get way more awards, or you're just like, how do I even deal with this? What about that and that aspect of being, like, friends with writers?
Well, I love this question because it inherently implies that I'm super good friends with, like, mega famous celebrity writers. And that's, like, a cross I have to bear. And Jim Butcher and I, it is so hard being besties with him forever. No, I've met Jim Butcher, but we're not best friends. Just full disclosure. Yet. But this is an interesting question. I'm going to be, like, really honest and petty here and say that I usually find something that I like more about myself and just remind myself. You have, like, 8 Hugos. Which is super impressive. And honestly, in order to not be intimidated, I remind myself that I make a lot more money than you do.
You make way more money than I do.
Just writing books. I have no idea how much you make in your day job.
Yeah,
but just writing books. I make more money than you do. Mm-hmm. But you will always have more awards than me. I feel like that puts us on, like, a nice kind of weirdly even footing.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? But I do have friends that sell way... So I'm friends with Marco Cluse. He is, like, the shit. He's kind of a shit sometimes. But I love you, Marco. But he's also... He sells, like, a ton of books. Like, I feel like I have okay book sales, but his are, like, crazy because people love him, and it's military sci-fi, which is not, like, I'm actually going to say this out loud, honestly. I did read about half of his first book, and it wasn't my cup of tea. And it's not because it's bad or because it's, like, poorly written or anything. It's because it's space. It's more of a picaresque, if I can just use my master's in English.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Like, it's not like a crescendo of action building up to a main climax and then descending quickly. Mm-hmm. It's sort of these interconnected stories about, you know, about the same character.
Yeah.
Because it's space And because I could just listen to two of the stories and then walk away, that's kind of what I did. And that's there's nothing wrong with that structure. And there's nothing wrong with his series. By all accounts, it's fantastic. And I think he's a really good writer. It's just not my particular jam. And I don't think that would offend Marco, although he'd probably joke that it offended him and I'd have to buy him a drink, but I'd do that anyway.
I was going to say, that's always a good thing. Yeah, oh, you totally offended me. Buy me a drink. Yeah, that's a good one.
Most of my friends, like some of my friends have figured that out by now because I was raised in a house where, you know, in the Midwest, how like love is food, food is love. In my house, teasing is love.
Yes.
Like that very British style of taking the piss out of someone, even though we don't use that term, although I'm like starting a hashtag because we need that in America. I was raised where the more you tease someone, the more you like them.
Yep.
And the more you like someone, the more you tease them. And like, it's very funny because it's almost this language that like my sisters and I know and like our extended family and everything. And then I'll meet somebody that I've never met and I'll like them and I'll like fun of them. And I get like this, what did I do to you? Like, oh, you impressed me. So I'll taunt you now.
This is funny that you bring this up because in fact, when we first met, that was what, where I was like, oh my God, we're sisters, because my family does the same thing. And you were totally taking the, and I won't say out of who, but you were totally taking the piss out of another author. And I was laughing my ass off. And I'm like, I love her. She is great. Because that's totally how my family is. It's like,
I honestly have no memory of this.
Oh, good.
It could literally be anyone.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. It could be so many people, but it was wonderful. And I was just like, I was just laughing and laughing. And I was like, this is absolutely perfect because it's something that so many people don't get that kind of humor.
Which is so legitimate, and they're
totally
better people.
Probably they are, yes.
Because this is not something that I love about myself, by the way. And I honestly, this year at Convergence, I had this moment where I was, that joke maybe went too far, and I'm going to try to be a nicer person. Now you're just hearing terrible things about me. But I actually spent the rest of the con, I'm going to say positive things about people now and see how that goes. You just feel it out. You're not committing or anything, but just feel it out. Have you ever met Paul Cornell?
I have not.
Okay.
Oh, no, I met him briefly. That's true. But we haven't like talked or anything.
He is my kryptonite because he is so nice that I don't know what to do. Like, he is so nice. Like, everything you throw at him, he just sends back sweetness. British polite sweetness. And I end up just standing there like, I'm going to go buy you a puppy. And actually, I consider him a good friend, especially since when we went to England, we, like, stayed at his house and stuff.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have, like, a dark underside. Like, I looked for, like, a dungeon room with, like, you know, like, a leather situation. And there wasn't.
That's good to know. It's good to know.
BTW. But yes, he's so nice that I kind of don't know what to do with it. And so that becomes my kryptonite. But also, I think it's probably good for me as, like, a human person for my growth stuff.
Yeah. No, to be honest, and I honestly had to change that. My husband's super nice. He's, like, the nicest. I know, the nicest person. So I would say something, and he wouldn't know what to do with it. I had to totally change, how I functioned. So, that's why it was so refreshing listening to you.
Luckily, and I gotta say, you know, and this is gonna sound, like, totally twisted thematically, that's on point. Like, when I met you at that con, and I was giving people shit in the bar, and you laughed, and you said, oh, Melissa, you are like my sister from another mister.
Yes.
And I gotta say, that was a huge moment for me.
Aww.
Because I knew who you were, and I was like, of course. I mean, if people are listening to this podcast, I'd like to think they know who you are. So we're in good company. Cameron Cool, kind of. That was like a really acceptance moment for me, like being invited into the cool kids table at high school to have Cameron Hurley be like, I get you, and I get what you're doing, and I love it. Like, that was a big deal for me. I know. Now I'll say something mean to balance things out.
I was going to say,
super uncomfortable with compliments?
Yes, I am. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I have a screenwriter friend who I talk to all the time, and he paid me, like, this super just gross compliment the other day. And I'm like, you have to say something weird. Criticize my mixed metaphor from a couple paragraphs ago or something. Like, I can't deal with this. Because when you're raised on teasing, it's probably how people from the South feel when somebody says, oh, bless your heart to them.
Yes. Oh, no, totally.
Because that's, like, secretly the worst, meanest thing you can say.
It's the most awful, For me, it's really hard when, you know, I go to stuff and people come up to you, especially about Geek Feminist Revolution, and people be crying and just be like, you're so amazing, and you're so inspired. And it's like, you don't know what to do. You're like, oh, well, thank you. And then you're like, I just want to go sit in my room with a pillow over my head.
I know. And you're like, this is the first time I've washed my hair this week. Like, yes. I am not impressive. Like, you think that this is impressive, but it is not. And see, this is what I mean. Like, writer friends get that.
Yes.
You know? And especially writer friends who have other lives, which most of us do. I mean, you have a day job and you're like a dog parent and, you know, and I know you have like complicated health issues, which you've mentioned before on the podcast. But, and I have kids, you know, those things. And I think that part of being a writer and living a double life that way is that you always feel like you're sucking at something.
Yes.
Like, If I feel like I'm having a good writing day, the chances are I'm having a bad mommy day. Granted, I have bad mommy days, like, when I don't even open my computer. But, just kidding, there are no days when I don't open my computer. That's part of why I'm a bad mommy. But, like, you always feel like you're trading.
Yes.
You know, I will give this thing my attention, but I know that it is at the cost of this other thing. And other writers, they get that.
I have found I can't be good at everything all the time. I just can't. You know, it's like I can get maybe 2 out of 3 sometimes.
Yeah.
But I have tried so many times. There, no matter what, if one or two things are going well, something else in my life is shit. It's just how it is. Yeah.
I remember, like, in feminism, they would say, oh, you can have everything.
Oh, God.
And then there was this whole backlash where, no, you can't have everything. and like, okay, first of all, make up your mind, culture. And secondly, I think you can have everything. You just can't be good at it on the same day.
All the time.
You can be... Like, I had one day where, like, I took my kids to Menchie's, which is frozen yogurt, one of those, you know, you pay by the ounce or whatever places. Mm. And I took my kids to Menchie's, and then we went home, and we turned our Menchie's cups into little boats, and we took them to the park, and we experimented with sailing them.
Aww.
And then we played on the playground. You can tell that this is not a normal thing for me by the fact that that's so ready in my memory, you know? But so I felt like the frickin' mother of the year that day because I was art and crafting. I was outdoors. I hate both of those things. But I did them for my kids. And mm-hmm. I felt like I had, you know what? I am not upset with how I parented today. I feel like I did all right. Guess how many words I wrote that day?
Yeah.
Not a hint, spoiler alert, not very many. I do occasionally have days where I write 5,000 words. I've gone up to 8,000 two times. Those are not days when I'm very present in my children's lives. And then this year, one of my children had a health problem, and I ended up going to a ton of, like, doctor's appointments and different, like, things. And it's fine. It's okay.
Yeah.
But I missed 2 deadlines.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Which I had never done. I had never missed a deadline. And I missed 2 deadlines to 2 different publishers for 2 different books. And they were both 6 to 8 weeks late, which had never happened to me. And I felt like the worst employee and like a huge writing failure. But what was I going to do? You know, like, what was my alternative? You can have everything. You can have all the lives you want, but you're not going to be good at all of them every day. And I think learning that and accepting that is a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And I think it's good for your productivity. It's good for your mental health. It's good. You have to forgive yourself so many times in this business, right? We're so hard on ourselves because so much of it feels like it's all on us. And that's why, again, author friendships are great because they're like, you need to be nice to yourself. You need to be forgive. You know, that same thing. Because we need people to repeat that to us. Where it's not all us. Shit happens. And a lot of this business is luck. Hard work, yes, but there's shit that you can't control.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think I know any writers who haven't at one time or another posted, I've got nothing today, I feel terrible, I feel like the worst writer, everything is shit, and then everybody jumps on board and like helps them, you know, says nice things. Or I've got writer friends who will sometimes post, so I just had a 1-hour massage, what are you guys doing to take care of yourself today? And even something small like that can be like, oh yeah, I guess I could do something to take care of myself today. Mm-hmm. Even if it's going to the gym or letting myself dick around online for 30 minutes before I start work. Which, frankly, I do most days. But I don't always forgive myself for it. Just having these little reminders from authors. You know, I actually also get a lot of people who I can relate to just because they work from home.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know you do sometimes, too.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah, for your day job. And, like, And I know people who aren't writers at all, but they just work from home, and often they parent while they work from home, which is the hardest thing in the universe. And like, all those people who can still do that deserve medals. I did that with the first book, and no joke, like, I know people say this, and I really mean it, I do not know how I did that. Like, I look back on that time, and I'm like, how did I finish that first book? I remember a lot of weekends at Borders, where I would get, I remember exactly, I would get a 20-ounce Diet Coke and a big-ass chocolate chip cookie, and I would park at a table, and I would stay there, like, all day. Because I have a husband who is incredibly supportive, and was supportive before I was making money. He was very understanding about how I can't just have a baby and that's my whole life. Some people find that incredibly fulfilling, and mm-hmm. it does everything that they need, and that's awesome. And mm-hmm. I honestly envy those people. But that's not me. Like, I need something else to do with my brain, or I'm gonna lose it. I'm gonna have to, like, run away to Iceland and find myself or something. And then nobody wins.
It's true.
Especially not the people of Iceland.
You'd be so mean to them.
I would, and they wouldn't know what to do.
They wouldn't have any idea, yeah.
I always feel bad about people who aren't inoculated to me, you know, yeah. who, like, meet me in a bar and see me giving shit to Kevin Hearn or whatever. And you know what it is? It's also the group dynamics of writer friendship that is so fun at conventions. Because I can talk to any of my friends, like, I Facebook message, like, shamelessly, you know. And so I chat with my writer friends fairly often. And I, you know, kind of keep up with them and whatever. But it's rare that we, like, get to be together, like, a bunch of us, which is also really fun at conventions. Because, you know, then you get to, like, have group dynamics of authors, which is fascinating, right?
Well, and, you know, that leads to another good question, which is, how the fuck do you make friends as a writer? How do you make friends with people, right? Which I hear from people all the time. They're like, a lot of people can't afford to go to conventions, which I understand.
Oh, yeah.
But Twitter has been so good for me, right? Because it's a great way of, it's a great icebreaker. It's like, yeah, we've talked on Twitter, or someone I know from Twitter, and then you can go to, like, a local con, like something that's an hour up the road or something, and that's very helpful. So that I found is a really good way to do it. But also, yeah, there's been people who I either never met or, again, met online and then, like, just started emailing them asking for advice for stuff, or they emailed me asking for advice. And so that's how it kind of starts. And like you had said, most of us don't really see each other that often anyway. It's just I don't know. It's a weird thing. I mean, what's your advice on that?
On making writer friends?
Yeah.
Well, first,
how do you make friends? People. Yeah, first you be mean.
Yeah, I know, right? That's my strategy. It's not for everyone. No, I know. I'm trying to be a better person. Anyway, you know, when I think back to, like, how to be a writer, first, always, like, you have to introduce yourself. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have a book sold.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Yep.
I am not so old that I don't remember what it was like when, like, I was working on a book, but that was it. I didn't have anything published. I didn't have an agent. I had, like, no street cred. And that was really hard because you feel like a parasite, and you feel like everyone is going to assume that by, like, greeting them, you're secretly about to ask for a blurb. And I think most people, cool people, they know better than to do that right away. Like, you don't email a writer out of nowhere and be like, hey, you don't know me, I don't know you, we've never spoken before, but please send me a 4-page email explaining what I should do with my problem. If I get those emails, I ignore them. At least put in the effort to, like, read my book and greet me on Twitter, dude, you know, like.
I know, right? Like, soften up this, let's start a relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's that whole let's get married when you've never met someone, right? Like, you gotta work on a relationship, yeah.
I gotta be romanced a little bit here, you know? But no, so, like, one of my oldest writing friends, literally, Alex, is Alex Bledsoe, and I was actually at his house at a play date yesterday. Not for us, for our children.
Either way,
anyway.
Either way, yeah.
And I met him when I was working on my first book. I went to a writer's conference here in Madison, so, like, I literally rode my bike there. He presented something about, I don't even remember what it was about, but he mentioned, like, Jurassic Park the book and Jurassic Park the movie. And hey, that's my thing, or one of my things. So I actually stayed after, went up to him, and was like, hey, like, I really liked your presentation, and did you ever, like, see this sequel, and, you know, what did you think about that? And I think I might have even said, could I email you sometime in chat? And poor stupid Alex said yes.
Sucker! Yeah.
I'm sure he's had so many reasons to regret that in the 8 years since. But we emailed back and forth a little bit. We became Facebook friends. And then once when I was really struggling with my agent, who I eventually fired, and I emailed him and asked him to coffee. Like, I asked him, can I buy, because we're in the same city almost. Like, he's on the outskirts. So I was like, can I buy you a coffee? And I was dirt poor at the time, but like, you buy the coffee, you know? I was like, can I meet you somewhere? Can I buy you a coffee and run this problem by you? And like, by then, this was not like the first message I sent him. Like, we had been, you know, friends for a while, for months, or even like over a year. And he was like, sure. And so like, he gave me advice that he didn't need to. And like, we had a nice coffee and everything. So I think part of it, it's a two-sided thing. You need to be respectful and you need to not give off a stinky odor of desperation. But you also need to approach people who are also willing to be generous with their time. And not every writer can be, which has to do with their own complex reasons. Yeah, it is complicated making friends, but I do recommend conventions or conferences. They don't have to be big or sparkly or anything, but also like reading their books.
Yeah, so you have something to talk about. Yeah.
When I've had, sometimes I get emails from people who haven't read my books. They just, you know, want to talk about writing or whatever. And it's like, why me? Like, you don't know anything about me.
Yeah.
And I do not feel like this is a personal experience. I feel like this is a form letter that you probably sent to a dozen writers. And what do I get out of this relationship? If you're not going to be my friend and you're not going to read my book, why would I help you? Like, I want to be a good person and I want to give back and I want to help new writers. But at the same time, I also need to draw a line for myself, for my own, like, mental health.
Well, totally. And that's a thing. I mean, and it depends on the writer, but this is our time. Our time is literally all we have on Earth, right? And again, we could be writing faster in that time.
Right.
And when people ask these questions, it's so funny. I mean, I've gotten those emails that are like 3 pages long from Joe Blow, who the knows who it is. And I'm just like, I'm just going to delete this. I can't even, there's nothing even to respond to. Yeah. It just goes on and on and on. It's not like, hey, do you have a resource about X? And then the end. And I don't have the time. I literally do not have the time if you want more books from me, people.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, and that's why, like, you do so much stuff with Patreon. And I think it's amazing how you've, like, worked that into part of your life. I will never do Patreon. And it's not because I have anything against it. It's because I don't have the time in my life to produce new content.
Yeah.
And so any Patreon that I set up would be getting this same stuff that everybody else gets. And that's not really fair. I wouldn't sign up for my Patreon if I was just getting the same shit I could get for free. Like, that's terrible. Yeah, I think this was actually Alex who once said, you can have, as a writer, like, you can have all these ways of promoting yourself. You can have all these ways of socializing. You can have a website, Twitter, social media. But at the end of the day, you have to remember to write books.
Right? Yes, exactly.
And that has to be, that always has to be the priority. That is where the money comes from. And because, you know, in theory, that's why you got into any of this, is to write books. It's actually a surprisingly something I have to remind myself sometimes, where I'll be like, okay, blog post, and okay, I promoted that thing that is coming out in 2 weeks, and I guess I should post these pictures for my trip because I'm using some of the locations in the next book. And sometimes I have to stop and be like, wait a minute, I should write a book.
Yeah, with spoilers. Yeah, I love it, though. That's where the money comes from. Spoilers.
Honestly, it
totally.
Is.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoy a lot of the social media aspect of being a writer. Not all of it, but most of it, I genuinely enjoy. It's a really easy way to not write, you know, because
yes,
you sort
is.
Of, you feel like you're
you feel like you've done something. Yeah.
Yeah. But secretly, you're not.
Yep.
Maybe if it's your first book that's coming out and promoting it is like going to make or break you, but most of the time, you should be writing books, or that needs to always remain more important.
Especially, I think, and I hear this from a lot of writers as they start to get, again, 2, 3, 4, 5 books, they start to realize, like, wow, between contracts and answering emails and reviewing contracts and outlining
and
social media
and
editing, yeah, they're like, you realize how little writing you actually do in this business. And like, this is fucked up. This isn't why I wanted to be a writer.
I remember, like, years and years ago, it was before my first book had come out. Actually, I was in the process of writing my first book, and I went to a writing conference where Dennis Lehane was the speaker.
Oh, yeah.
And he insisted that writers can't get more than 3 hours of writing time a day, or else they're just producing shit.
Well, he's maybe him.
Right? No, but, you know, then when I stop and think about How much, because I am very lucky and I've got 12 books out and I can afford to have a babysitter come to my house and make sure my kids don't die. And actually, she's amazing. Like, we call her Saint Amanda because she does all the crap with them that I hate, like baking and going outside and crafts and shit. Oh, I love her so much. So I can afford that. So I have a block of time every day that belongs to me for my job. And how much of it do I spend on contracts and errands and promo stuff and social media? And how much is actual, like, typing of book?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess 3 hours is not that off.
That's true. No, that's a good point.
You know,
when
you really think it out. Although I have to say, like, I've found 3 hour chunks. I can do a chunk in the morning and a chunk in the evening. Like, I need some time in between. It's really hard to sit down, set a timer for 5 hours, not stop typing. Like, I don't know anybody who can do that, and God bless them if they can, because I am not jealous. That's rough. So yeah, while I don't agree with the 3 hour rule, I do sometimes use it to make myself feel better.
Yes. No, it, for me, you know, I'm a binge writer, so I don't write every day, but when I do write, it is for a long time. And there are breaks, obviously, in there. But, like, I write. But then I don't write for a week. So it's a different sort of dynamic. I'm just going to say, is there anything else that you would like to say? Any tips or thoughts about author friendships before I give you the opportunity to tell everyone about your amazing work and where they can find you?
I mean, it's not that great, okay? Like,
she's from the Midwest. Can you tell?
Let's not oversell it, Cameron, okay? Like,
she's the shit on Amazon. Listen.
They're enjoyable. I know, right? I'm the shit on Amazon. I need that on a bumper sticker.
You really do. Or a pin. Like, you need a ribbon. You need a ribbon that you bring.
Oh,
to,
yeah. Like,
yeah, I'm the shit on Amazon. People would love that.
So that all the people who encounter me can all come together, realize it, and not care. But, like, together. You know? I think it could really bring people together. No, okay, so advice. It sounds basic. Or, no, it sounds contradictory. If you're trying to make friends, you have to not be an asshole, but also be willing to put yourself out there. And that's going to sometimes feel like a contradiction. If you are a writer and you are at a convention with an author you love, you've read 5 of their books, you've always loved them, you follow them on Twitter for years, you know things about them, and you just finished your second book and you have a question, like, you're going to have to go up and ask. And that's okay. Actually, that specific writer might not be super receptive to it. But that's not the same as, like, being an asshole. You have to put yourself out there, and you also have to not be a dick about it. Which, honestly, is probably, like, half of life.
I was just going to say, that sounds like great life advice, really.
I am the smartest.
You are the smartest.
So, people everywhere can learn from me and my example.
It's true. All right, Melissa, so where can folks find you if they want to learn more about you and your work?
Well, I'm a really big deal on Amazon.
In case you hadn't picked that up yet, people, really big deal on Amazon.
So I publish under Melissa F. Olson, and I tell everybody, well, like, when it's not, like, a mixed crowd, I tell them that the F is for fucking Melissa fucking Olson. But, you know, that does help them distinguish it from other letters. Published under Melissa F. Olson. My website is just melissafolson.com. All of my books are available on Amazon. A few of them are available other places. You can walk into almost any bookstore and ask to order them if they don't carry them. They're almost all urban fantasy. Like, I have a long-running series from 47 North. I did something kind of weird with where I split it up into 3 trilogies, but they're all set in the same world. So it's kind of fun because there are 3 entry points. Like, you could start at book 4 or you could start at book 7. And then I have a novella series trilogy through Tor.com as well.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So go check out Melissa's stuff, folks. And Melissa, thank you so much for thinking of this topic so I didn't have to.
Oh, you're welcome. We still need to have our 80s movies podcast sometime.
Oh, my God. We do. Yes.
For those of you who don't know, which is everyone, Cameron and I have a plan to have a feminist podcast about 80s movies where we spend, like, the first 5 minutes, okay, this is why it's an incredibly sexist movie. And then after that, we just talk about how rad they are.
How rad it is. That's the entire podcast. Yeah. People would pay for that, Melissa. That's what your Patreon's going to be, is a drunk 80s podcast with Melissa and Cameron.
Feminist podcast. I feel strongly like we need to acknowledge. But no, this came from, like, a tweet you did ages ago where you pointed out that, like, you let yourself like 80s movies.
Oh, totally, yeah.
And I think that's a big deal, because as feminists, we often feel like there are things we should be ashamed of enjoying. But, you know, when I was 12 and watching Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, I was not thinking about the role of sexism in the film. I was just enjoying myself.
Totally.
And I think that there's a space for acknowledging that something is problematic, but still accessing, like, an enjoyment of it. And I loved that you thought that, because it made me feel less like a dick.
Well, no, but you have to. Literally everything is fucking problematic, right? There is no perfect piece of media. If you were like, I'm not going to like anything that's problematic, the truth is you're not going to fucking like anything. You're just sitting in your room and do nothing all day, because we live in a shitty place. So, to me, you have to, like, take the things, be like, I realize this is problematic. I mean, I read Conan novels. Yes. You have to realize, wow, all this shit is really problematic. But here are the aspects I really like. Oh, no, I agree. Yeah.
Someday we'll have that podcast, and it'll be so fucking rad. People are going to love it. They're going to pay, like, ones of dollars.
DuckTales money.
Yeah.
DuckTales money. Tissue boxes full of money.
John Scalzi money. They're going to pay John Scalzi money for it.
All right, lady. Thank you so much again for being on the podcast. Go pack, and I'll talk to you later then.
All right, then. Good.
All right, bye-bye.
And there it is for this episode of Get to Work Hurley. Now, I did want to note a few other things here about author friendships and approaching other writers, since, as was noted here, we are all different, just like humans are. Every writer is a different humanoid being with different likes and loves and issues and boundaries and space and all those things. So Melissa and I did actually talk after the recording about those weird, awkward moments when you approach a writer. Now, the writer could be, you know, be seen, you know, as your peer or a baby writer or even someone who seems like more famous and successful than you. And we talked about what it's like and how to deal when, like, they completely blow you off. They don't remember you and you feel like trash. So I actually went ahead and edited that out because it does mention particular authors. I know you all were like, that would be the best part. But I went ahead and took that out. Since, again, we're not feuding. Like, again, you aren't always going to connect with every writer. I mean, Melissa, as we shared in our story, Melissa's, mercilessly teasing other writers could have been a huge turnoff for me. And I could have just been like, that is a mean person, and I don't want to speak to that person. And we wouldn't have hit it off. But because I grew up in the same household where, like, teasing is love, and you were valued for having a smart mouth, it was like we totally got on. And then as we talked about, you know, you have the issue of being writers as well, and so you have that to bond over. But so I want to actually sum up just some thoughts on that, some general thoughts on, you know, what happens if, you know, you don't connect with someone whose work you really love and they turn out to be an asshole, or it's work that you really love, or someone you would really like to connect with and it just doesn't work out. You just don't have enough in common. As we noted in the podcast, like, not everybody's going to like you. I know a writer who has actually been trying to be friends with a much more famous and successful author for years. And with the purposeful, and here's the problem, right? With a purposeful idea that he wants to make a connection with them because he feels it's a good networking opportunity, right? Like, you can't force a friendship. I feel like we can feel that when you're trying to do that instead of, like, just something organic. Because the reality is, at this point, his attempts are kind of starting to feel desperate. you can't do it. As you heard in the story, when with Melissa and I, we actually met at Worldcon Spokane, and Lee Harris, it was at some writers with drinks thing, and Lee Harris, who is an editor at Tor Books and formerly an editor at Angry Robot, which is how I knew him, since that's publisher for my Mirror Empire series, he introduced us. So while we hit it off, there were actually a lot more people that I met there in Spokane and that I meet at every convention who either I don't have meaningful conversations with, or I meet in passing, like, quickly at a signing, and it's just there's not something that either I'm hungover or exhausted, or we just don't have a connection, and I completely fail to remember them. For real, like, the recent Worldcon in Finland, it was kind of super awkward because there were at least six people who came up to me and said, we met and chatted at, you know, a mixer or in a bar in Spokane. And this was years ago, to be fair to myself. This was like 3 years ago. And I could not for the life of me recall meeting them. It was rough. The reality is, that authors meet dozens, if not hundreds, of people at every convention or conference. And once I introduced myself, in fact, I once introduced myself to another writer four times at four completely separate conferences and conventions over, again, it was over a while, over like 2 years before he actually remembered that we'd met before. And this is not uncommon. I've done this to other writers myself where I was talking to another writer. She's like, oh, and I was like, oh, have we met? And she said, yes. Yes, we've met. I was on a panel with you 2 years ago or whatever. And you feel kind of dumb. But the reality is I'm going through my day. We're all going through our days. We're exhausted. We're on very little sleep. Sometimes you connect and sometimes you don't. And that's why, again, as Melissa said, the bar is such a great opportunity to meet people because you're not like, oh, I got to go to this panel, or you're not nervous about being on the panel. Unfortunately, then you run into the issue where sometimes you're just really drunk and you don't remember anything, which seems like that must have been Spokane for me. So it happens. And you just can't force these things. I also want to remember, you remember this too, because I think we sometimes feel like there's a one chance to do something and you either connect or you don't and that's it. But the fact is that the longer you're in this field and the more that you write and the more that you see and interact with other professionals, the easier this is going to get. I had this exact experience at Confusion. The first time I went to Confusion in Detroit, I felt like I didn't know anybody and I was completely stupid and nobody liked me and I didn't have any friends. And my husband kept telling me, you have to keep going. He's like, you have to keep going to this goddamn convention because the more you go, the more people remember you and the easier it gets to talk to people. That was really hard because, again, I'm a huge introvert. But I do, you know, as Melissa and I talked about, there's real value in author friendships, not just in the camaraderie aspect, but also that whole thing of sometimes you do need advice once you get, again, more established in friendship. And sometimes you do, you know, need somebody to just commiserate with. So those are really great opportunities. And to kind of throw it out the window because you had one awkward experience is kind of, you know, throwing out the baby with bathwater there. Now, that's, again, don't be a dick, know when to walk away, and when someone says, we're done, and you clearly are not getting on, it's absolutely possible you're just never going to have anything in common with a writer that you'd like to be friends with. Remember, friendship is a two-way street. It's like Melissa talked about when people email her, and they're just like, you know, oh, I haven't read your books, and I'm sending this thing to all these authors. Like, what do you offer in a friendship? And what do they offer in a friendship? It has to be a mutual beneficial relationship like any relationship. That's okay if you don't have anything in common, if you don't hit it off. Remember that there are tons of amazing people to meet in this profession. And I can tell you, I know I, for one, my life is totally better for having met so many of them. Times are super tough right now. And they are always a lot better when you have people out there who you can share all this bullshit with. Anyhow, best of luck to you all and hang in there. Now, get back to work.